Welcome back to episode 8 of the TPL pod. Today we sit down with Dave Coggin of PFA Fitness. Dave Coggin was a dual threat out of high school. A commit to play quarterback at Clemson and a first round pick in the MLB draft, Dave went on a pitch for the Philadelphia Phillies before returning home to found PFA Fitness in Southern California. Dave has revolutionized how pitching coaches teach proper arm path technique. What was once viewed as an uncoachable aspect of pitching, Dave found that by focusing on the early stages of the arm path, rather than all the other issues in a player's delivery, he could help clean up their mechanics to be more efficient and stay healthier. Now, commonplace in Major League Baseball, many pitchers have adopted a shorter arm path. Dave recently developed the Pocket Path to help athletes of all ages train proper throwing mechanics. This episode is loaded with throwing mechanics discussions that we simplify for anyone to understand. But now, without further ado, let's get into it. Dave, thank you so much for joining me today. I really appreciate you coming on.
Yeah, man, anytime.
Yeah, this is awesome.
Of course.
So, busy day. This is the new facility you're at right now. How are things going over there?
Yeah, we're here in Montclair. New facility, 3 months in, maybe a little more than 3 months in, but good, really good. We got a couple guys, Thomont Wells over here finishing up. Jeremy Giambi's out there finishing up some hitting and finishing up training and finding a little bit of time to get on the call and talk about some stuff, which is cool, and then grab some lunch, man. I'm starving.
Beautiful. I appreciate it. Well, we won't cut into your lunch too bad.
No worries.
But I wanted to start a little bit with you as a player and kind of get into your training and how you developed in your youth. Were there some mechanical focuses that really allowed you to be successful? I know kind of what you teach now. Was that something that you were learning as a younger player?
You know what? It's more back when I played. I don't think I kind of really understood what mechanics were. Luckily, I did have a good pitching coach even when I was in youth, 10, 11, 12 years old. Pitching coach by the name of Frank Pastore, kind of a local legend here, played for the Reds. And it's kind of funny, like you don't think of things that long ago that are going to really translate to you for your whole career. But I remember certain drills, certain things that he would say to do that still resonated, although I know more about it now than I did then. But it was still, even though quote unquote old school, it really carried over quite a lot, even in my career now. And even as I coach, there might be times where I pull some thought from something I heard from when I was at 10, 11, 12 years old. You know, it could be as simple as just like, hey, you're like a curveball grip or something, you know?
Right.
And then that kind of, that helped kind of solidify that, made sure that I was at least fundamentally really good as a baseball player, physically wise, talent wise, playing all the sports that I played, I think really played a role in all of the other ones being as good as I were in all of them. But soccer, I always tell people, was my number one sport for the longest period of time in my career. It was I'm known for, it's kind of funny, like I was known for soccer for, you know, youth age all the way into high school. Then baseball, I was good at too as well, but not really the number one guy. I was just always in the, you know, top guys. And that would be locally in our city, not like now you're just kind of measured by national rankings and stuff, but I would just be pretty good in our own little kind of circle here. But football took on a role in high school that kind of trumped them all. Like it took over everything. And as often football does, just because it's such a time consuming sport, especially if you're a quarterback, like I was, learning defenses and all these different things. But most importantly, with having those sports in my background, it gave me the ability to kind of process, I think, coaching better from certain styles of coaching, from a football coach that might be aggressive natured and in your face and really kind of pound you mentally and physically, to a soccer coach that's going to pound you physically and challenge you where you can't give up because you're just having to run so much. You're having to adjust and learn angles and all these different things that a soccer player has to do, footwork and things that just have nothing to do with throwing, but have everything to do with endurance and positioning and competing against guys that are way faster than you, smaller than you, quicker than you, but being able to manage how you defend them. That was really important for me. And then baseball seemed like it was kind of the vacation of those two sports. You know, it was like, and I'm convinced why so many kids want to play baseball. And I'll tell parents all the time, you got to get your kid to play some more sports. They're like, oh no, we tried. They love baseball. They're just huge fans. I was like, they're huge fans of standing for 3 hours doing nothing rather than running for 3 hours at a soccer practice. You know, that's right. What they're huge fans with.
Yeah, I lasted about a year in soccer.
Oh, it's tough. Yeah, it is tough. And so anyway, so to me, there is a physical component, there's a mental component that really played a huge role in making me, you know, eventually kind of figure out what sport I was going to go to and thrive in. Lucky for me that it was two sports for quite a long time, and I was one of the rare athletes that probably had to make a decision between three sports to play at the Division I level: soccer, football, and baseball. So I chose football, number one for me, and that was going to go to Clemson to play quarterback, but also secondarily there was to play baseball as well. By the time senior year came around, though, my combination of a football injury to my knee, my MCL torn, nothing major, but enough to take me out for about 5 games, was enough for me to kind of have that kind of back in my head doubt, especially when scouts are coming in and they're starting to kind of get to know you a little better. They're starting to tell you about what pro ball is about. They're starting to tell you that, yeah, you know, you're going to go to Clemson, you're going to get injured, you already did in high school, it's going to come. So all those things in combination, having a really good senior season in baseball, being drafted in the first round, kind of gravitated me towards playing pro ball and starting that career. And, you know, not ever really looking back to say I would have done anything differently, but it's been a good ride so far, and it's put me to where I am now and given me a lot of tools in my toolbox from all the amazing coaches that I've run across and some of the bad ones I have too, and just learning from the whole process of it.
Very much. Very cool. Was there, as a quarterback, do you think that your throwing mechanics were just different at a younger age? Was this something like, was teaching the pocket path not necessary for you because you'd already learned some of these mechanics?
Yes and no. I mean, I look back at my career as a baseball player and I see big flaws that I would have corrected if I was working with me present day. So although, and I usually really tell this to my first evals every time I'm working with a new little leaguer or up to a big leaguer is, what I'm going to tell you, you need to listen to me, not because I played Major League Baseball, because that doesn't really tell the whole story. There's tons of major leaguers that are in the major leagues and they're doing things really poorly, but they're so physically gifted, they're able to get from point A to B. Now, the problem in between point A and B, though, is that they're putting stress on their arms, they're inconsistent in strikes, their velocity decreases, whatever, there's going to be leakage going on. So when I look back and I see a video of myself throwing in the big league, and I was told growing up, coaches all the time, oh, you got great mechanics, you came from football, but my football delivery wasn't what my baseball delivery was. It was close enough to allow my physical attributes to be able to kind of cover up some flaws, but it was always going to be an issue of like the analogy I use is a race car. Like if a race car, you can keep getting the engine better and better, but if the wheels are misaligned a little bit, you're still the first guy in the pits every single time. So I felt like I had all this great engine, but it seemed like year to year, I was always the first guy on the DL, first guy always getting injured, yet everybody telling me I had great mechanics. So yeah, going back, was there a lot of things that I probably was able to do because of football, because of my throwing the football? Yes, because if I was any worse in my delivery baseball-wise, it would have been pretty bad. I would have a really short career, probably never made it to the big leagues at all.
Interesting. So was there – would you say that you had a pocket path or no?
Yes and no. So I had a pocket – so just so everyone knows what pocket is that's listening, the pocket is a description of the arm path, first of all. So we have four positions that we talk about that we try to get to. First position one and two is one would be all backups if you can get in the screen. One or zero or neutral is our kind of set position as a pitcher or infielder taking the ball into his belly. Pretty typical teach there. From here, this is really important to where things start to kind of go away from us or they're going into a positive or negative way. So when we look at an infielder take the ball away, takes the ball out of the glove, that's called our one position. So he's just starting his break. So typically in that break, you'll see the fingers get on top of the ball. He'll let the elbow take the ball out of the glove, not the hand take the ball out of the glove. So that would be more of an outfielder teach or a guy who's really stabbing or aggressiveness. So we're trying to create that less aggressiveness in that moment. So that way we can start to sequence up. So the two position would be where the elbow now starts to get matches shoulder height. So now when the elbow is at shoulder height, that's our two position. So that's the pocket for that. Whip, when you hear us say pocket, whip and stick, whip is going to be the hip and shoulder separation. And when we turn our hips, that's what should lay the ball or the ball in hand into layback. And that's where you'll feel the scap loading. So you know, obviously we want to get into that scap load. We want to be in a strong position. This would not be in a strong position if we were trying to do that for obvious reasons. So we're just trying to train the arm to float to that two position, allow the hips to pick up the arm from there. And now stick is going to be the lower half stuff. So you can really break it down in this like number sequence, where pitchers tend to really like that kind of feeling of numbering it, because it makes more sense to them, rather than if I just went one and I started to turn my hips too early because my arm's here. Now I didn't get to the two, but I'm already at three. So now my arm's going to have to like muscle out of there. So When I look at my delivery when I was younger, I was definitely late. So I pushed my hands away. I get drop and drive, really deep in my legs, but that meant I got really far down the mound. Now I got up to that position, but as you see in the screen, I'd almost be out of the screen by the time that arm got there. Now I was strong enough in my lower half to be able to still block, lead leg block, but it was a deeper block, deeper leg block, something where my knee bend was really, really deep. So yeah, you could see it and go, wow, look at this guy. He's using his legs really well. But not efficiently, in my opinion, because it wasn't because I wasn't using my legs or my leg kick was wrong or my shin angle or my hip loading. It was just because the time it took my arm to go through that whole motion, I got to here. Now, if I would have gotten to that motion, done the same thing with my body, but got there sooner, now when I rotated, my knee angle going into the ground for that stick and that lead leg block would have been so much more shallow and be able to now help me, assist me to rotate the hips, taking a ton of stress off my arm. In the front of my shoulder, especially where I had a lot of issues. So to me, that's what I was close, but definitely wasn't there. Just like a lot of guys. I mean, there's guys in the big leagues that will come in here, fly in, and they're successful guys. They're guys who everybody would know the household name, and will point out something and they'll think, hey, you're going to work on my arm path, right? And I'm like, well, not necessarily. There might be some other things. And then they're kind of surprised, because when I look at the whole sequence thing, there's a reason why I call it pocket, whip, and stick, and not whip, pocket, stick, or whatever it is because I found out a long time ago, if I try to teach the whole mess that I see, like, oh, there's a problem with landing, there's a problem with glove, head posture, arm path, all da da, it would be much longer process. If I went to the arm path first, it was amazing to see how so many other pieces, the head posture, shin angle, the landing lead leg was starting to kind of find a better position, only because I was changing when the timing of the arm was there. So that was amazing to watch that. It actually surprised me as much as it will surprise someone who actually gets the pocket path for the first time, starts to coach with it and starts going, holy crap, it just helped like five other things that this kid was working on. I said, I know it sounds stupid. It sounds simple. It sounds gimmicky, but when you actually get it, and it's funny that a couple of major league teams, probably, I won't say the names, but a couple of coaches have used it for their outfielders or for their infielders, and they go, and I don't know if it's a great endorsement or not, but they said, man, it kind of looked gimmicky. We weren't sure, but when we got it, it was amazing. It worked so well, and it was so easy to for the player to process. We were like shocked of other things that worked with. And I said, man, I try to tell people that, but right. Some people, you just have to see it to believe it. You have to like shadow for a week and watch a 10-year-old, 11, a 12-year-old, a 15-year-old who's not strong enough to do it wrong yet. And see how he changes and just becomes a guy that's like, wow, I had no idea that was in him. Where the pro guys, they're strong enough to, you know, they're stubborn and strong. They can do it. They can put, oh, look, my arm's up here and I'm in the big leagues. Okay, well, we'll see if you are 3 years from now.
Right.
You know, let's see what your career is, see how long it goes. Because if there's one thing that I see all the time, guys who play for 10 plus years, five plus, whatever, long careers, second contract type years, is they start to look very similar. They don't look like, if you took all the first year guys in the big leagues, you see these electric arms, go take a bunch of infielders, a bunch of relievers and see them. You could go, you'd be like, oh my God, there's a million different ways to pitch. But not when you start to bring it down to the other side, where you start to see the guys who have, you know, 10 year careers, then you're going, dude, these all, they look calmer. They look more efficient. Their arm paths aren't ball dominant now. Wow. Wait, why wouldn't I teach that then to the kid who isn't there yet? I don't want him to get injured first or end his career because he just couldn't throw strikes. I want him to know this stuff first. And then, hey, all right, roll the dice. See if you're physically good enough, mentally good enough. There's plenty of reasons why we don't get to the big leagues or we don't get to Division I. And some of them, most of them aren't physical. So I might as well at least help that physical part out, at least give them a chance. And that's my kind of thought about it.
Yeah. I've never thought about it from the second contract perspective. Is the big horses, everyone's kind of doing the same thing here. There's not a lot of messed up fly out. There's not a lot going on.
Yeah, and then even in their training, it's not the typical training that you see on Instagram. You know, it's very, basic and very systematic, and it's very consistent. It's not, not to put a knock on anything, any different style, but it's not some of these kind of flash in the pan training things that you see on Instagram that look awesome right now, and yet you don't see the big boys doing those, never have. And so there's just some things that you have to kind of, sometimes you take a step back and you look and go, all right, maybe the old way is still good and we don't want to forget that. And there's a new way to bring it in. And, you just don't want to lose sight of like some of the basic fundamentals and foundations that we see. It's just like no different in life, right? You're going to have a good conversation with someone who's been around for a long time. They're going to teach you a lot. And just that, simple sitting on the porch conversation, right? It's because they've been through it. They've been through it. They've seen what worked and what didn't work. And you're kind of like, no, this works right now. This is the best way to do it. And then all of a sudden, 5 years from now, you're doing it completely different, saying the same exact thing.
For sure. So. Even developmentally for myself, I've noticed some of the simpler changes I've made into like reducing the, do I really need to squat 1,000 pounds? Do I really need do X, Y, and Z? Like if you just listen to your body and start to do things more efficiently, you feel so much better.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
So when you first started PFA, and it sounds like you kind of came about this, the development of the pocket whip and stick, just based on being a pitching coach and being able to see that cleaning up arm action was a good first step. Yeah. When you first started PFA, would you call yourself a more traditional? I kind of give you a lot of credit as revolutionizing the arm path teaching. I don't think nobody really discussed changing arm paths, right? Yeah. There was a lot of like, fix your head, fix your arm, fix your hips, fix your whatever. But nobody said, hey, you take the ball out of your glove wrong. And we're trying to play catch up from the first step. Mm-hmm. Were you a pitching coach were you teaching other things and you kind of learned this as you went?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I kind of stumbled upon it, right? I mean, one thing I think I'm good at is, and I have, and sometimes it's a curse, is common sense. and an ability to be, humble and not be able to think like this is the only way you should do it. One of my first starts that I got into all this and starting PFA was first being down with Tom House. So Tom asked me to come work with him at USC. He was just starting there for the first time and he's starting this RDRBI thing. And I was like, well, I just retired. I don't know what else to do. So I'll go down there. So part of that process was my first job was teaching these two Indian kids who came from India to be able to throw a baseball and to be
this the one with so the movie.
This is the $1 million arm. So that was like literally my first job. Then as I'm with Tom, he's showing me and I'm being around all this biomechanics and all the slow motion analysis and also the idea of just joint integrity and fitness and these things. And I was thinking to myself, I kind of like, this is new to me. I've never looked at pitching that way at all. It was just more just, the old stuff, like you said, head posture, this kind of the other thing. And when I was trying to figure out which direction I was going to go with my career, he wanted me to help him more down at USC, but I could only do that really sparingly. So I'd go down there and help with the quarterbacks. So I'd work with Tom Brady and Drew Brees and Alex Cog, all these guys. And so it got me thinking like, man, I like working with different athletes and I like the physical side of it because then you can work with different sports. If you just only be a pitching guy, you're only going to work with pitching guys. So I started thinking about something called prevention fitness for athletes, which is still PFA, but I asked my buddy who owned a physical therapy, can I start this inside your therapy room? He's like, yeah, okay, I'll come in when you close and I'll just take kids and try to bridge the gap of training with an arm care mindset, core exercises, and then heavy strength with it. So combining them, and it's very common nowadays, but that wasn't at all. It was only football training 10 plus years ago. There was very, very few kind of blending all that prehab into training. So I did that and that was awesome. I loved that. That was really my passion. So of course, in that I know about pitching, I pitched in the big league. So at least I can give some pitching lessons to do that. So I did that. PFA grew on the strength side of things. And then my clientele grew on the pitching side of things. So then I would hire a trainer to help me. And then that gave me more time to work for pitching. And then as I'm looking at that, I'm going, man, there's gotta be better ways. And that's when I stumbled upon that kind of thought of like, how do I find a common denominator to teach these fundamental things first and then get to the more fine-tuning things for pitchers. And I say this a lot and I'm almost repeating it in this way, but I said to myself, if I went and I got rid of all the relievers in all the major leagues and I said, okay, I'm left with starters. And people ask, why do you get rid of relievers? They're in the big leagues. They're studs. I said, I'm just doing that. Yeah, there are some good deliveries. But the reason I'm doing that in my mind was I need to narrow things down somehow. And if you think of a reliever, like nobody's going to tell somebody, dude, hey, Zach, you throw four pitches for strikes. You get righties out. You get lefties out, a really great clip. You get stronger as the game goes. Your velocity stays strong all season long. You stay healthy. I think you'd be a wonderful reliever. Like, nobody would say that, right? So they would say that, obviously, to the relievers, right? So baseball has that way of just like not trying to, or maybe not have enough time. Maybe they try to, but they just don't have enough time. They don't have to try to figure out why you aren't one of those things. Why do you only get righties out? Why do you only get lefties out? Why do you get hurt? Why do you velocity decreases? All those things. So what they do is they just find a different position for you, because what baseball always has more than any other sport is the next guy up.
It's always more dudes.
Oh yeah, all the time. Recruits, if it's in college, if it's a high school, it's a JV kid that's killing it, or a freshman. If it's pro ball, obviously minor league, free agency, all these different things. So you always have a person that could just hopefully fill that gap. Okay, so five guys left on a team, and I would tell the kids this. I go, okay, well, if it's your favorite team in the big leagues, you probably know who your 3, 4, 5 starters are. But if it's not your favorite team, you don't know who that guy is. And I go, yeah, because why? Because he's probably on his way to the minor, to the bullpen or the minor leagues, or he's supposed to be the number one and two guy, but he just can't get over whatever it is. So let's get rid of those guys too. So now we're down to the number one and two starters, and everybody knows those guys' names because of one really important thing. Kind of two, they're together. They've longevity, played for a long time, and they make the most money. So they go together. So let's look at why those guys were able to make that career path. That goes back to what I was saying earlier about looking at the guys who play the game for a long time. So that's how I did it at first. So as I'm doing that, I start thinking, okay, well, what's common denominator now on them? Background. They were infielders. They were shortstop when they were younger. They were a quarterback when they were in high school. Maybe catcher even. So these guys were coming from heavy those positions and then pitch a little bit. And then once they got to the pro ball, then it switched and they pitched a lot. But they created this really amazing foundation to become a really efficient thrower, because of those positions I just mentioned. You have to throw the ball hard. You have to throw the ball accurate. And you have to do those two things in a short space and time. So there's very few ways that those guys do it any different. So when you see those guys do that, they do it very similar. So that's where my foundation came, because when I had three pitchers came in for the first time, and I had one that was a shortstop primary, pitcher secondary, I have a guy who's a pitcher only, kind of uncoordinated, goofy, and then I have an outfielder who wants to pitch too. So they all want to pitch. The shortstop, I can make him into a pitcher in literally a month, maybe less. That goofy, kind of uncoordinated PO, that's going to take a long time because he's just not connected, right? So he may have a big arm, but he has no idea where it's going. The outfielder, that's going to take just as long too, because he's so used to being such a long ball dominant throw. And now he's got to figure out how not to use momentum, because now he's not going to get a crow hop. And now he's got to figure out still, how do I have that arm to be up in a position when I can't move anywhere? So that's why you see a lot of guys who can long toss really far, or he's a great outfield arm, but man, we get on the mound and it just like goes down.
Right.
It's because he hasn't learned how to be in the right places at the right time yet, because he hasn't had that consistent training. And I always say pitchers are all down the left field line doing all these wacky drills and all these different things and stationary stuff. And to me, the other side of the field is all these shortstops and infielders playing catch. And they're just like whipping the ball around to each other, hitting each other in the chest. And the pitchers are over there running to center field because the ball just went over someone's head, ankle shot, one shot, and then another shot, because they're all like overthinking hip and shoulders and right. All this different stuff, you know? And I'm like, dude, just
shortstops play catch in front of people. Like there could be a family behind guy. They're winging it around.
Yeah. And if there's a family and behind some pitchers, I'm like, oh my God, your family.
We're going to center field. Yeah.
Right. So those are like that common sense thing. Like to me, like, and it's not some like, wow, what amazing concept. It was just like, has anyone really kind of like went all in on this and see what it would do? And then that's when, you know, my pitchers just changed. Now, of course, because we had the strength component, the weight room first, which was a huge advantage, that was what made the skill part and the strength part match up and create just monsters for like a good 7-8 year run when travel ball wasn't so crazy as it is now, where you can hardly find a time to lift. back then there was a lot of plenty of time during the week to lift. So you had this great combination of skill work and high level training. And when it matches up, you get these guys who are like a lot of these players that have come out of here out of D2s and out of these small schools and just gone to the big leagues. And that's been a really cool concept we're trying to get back to now. But yeah, that's kind of the way it kind of ebbed and flowed and got to the point that, you know, we're at now. Now, Pocket Path was kind of a cool story, because just talk about what the pocket, why I call it the pocket, is literally simple. I was playing, a couple guys were playing long toss out of the park. They're out there about 200 plus feet. And I like sharing the story because it kind of goes like an aha moment of like, oh, that's why you call it that. They threw a ball over the head. It went under a fence. It was gone. All right. So I had a ball in my pocket, my front pocket. And they yelled, as I was talking to somebody, they yelled, hey, we need a ball. And I just kind of turned to them and I took it out of my pocket in one motion just to get rid of it quick. And I threw it and I went, oh crap. Because it was in my pocket, it kind of forced me to take it out like that and throw. And I was like, I felt really good on my arm. And then that was it. I was like, oh crap, I'll just call it the pocket, because I was studying the arm pass.
That's funny. And,
yeah, so that's kind of like what people think. It's like, why you call it the pocket? I don't know. And that was why it was. And then so I'm giving a lesson to fast forward about a couple years later, but I'm giving a lesson to one of my parents I just met, and he brings his kid in and go over all these kids. He was playing catch with them before, so I could tell he plays ball, or he's been in the game or something, you know. So I give my thing. I see some holes in his delivery. I give the thing. All right, good. And he's listening to me, and he's going, hey, that's like the simplest way I've ever seen it explained, and I can't believe the difference it made. Can I get a pitching lesson? And I'm like, you, what the heck? What do you want, a pitching lesson? You're his dad, you know. And he goes, well, I play Sundays and I go out to Arizona and I play in these tournaments and all these things. And I was like, oh, okay. So I'm starting working with him now. So now him and his son are doing bullpens together, which is pretty
that's awesome.
And they're throwing, and he's throwing so much better. And he's like, wow, what a difference that's helping my arm. And this guy, he happened to pitch in Japan. So he played and he knew, you know, knew about throwing, but he never heard it that way. So as he was listening to me and watching me coach, and then he would go to little league practice and help out. And he was watching these kids practice. And you tell little Johnny what to do, and he's doing it fine. Then you turn your head to tell Steven, and now Johnny's doing it wrong again. Steven's right now doing it wrong. So, and you could just totally picture that. He's like, have you ever thought of like doing something that, or making something that the kids can use at home? They can practice it. So this guy is like he's a really entrepreneur type, and he's a kind of a tinker like I am too. And so he sketched out something, and I said, yeah, I've thought of some things, but I don't have any time to do anything. But so he goes, let me send you a sketch of something. And so he sends me a sketch, and it's a shirt, and it's got these pockets sewn into the front, you know, so you slide mm-hmm. your hand in. And I was like, yeah, that could work actually. Right. And it was starting to get me, because I had my idea thinking of that same concept was the quarterback that has that cold weather pouch in front,
right,
you know, and he's keeping his hands warm. And I always thought, like, if you put a ball in there, and then you take it out, you can only take it out one way. It's
right.
fixed in there. But if you angled it, then it would take it out just right in that sweet spot, like an infielder taking a ball out of his glove. And I was like, dang, wouldn't it great? You know, so we kind of got together and said, would that be amazing if kids can actually practice at home? When you leave a lesson with a coach, they don't work on this stuff, you know, and you come Never. Back and you're starting for square one. Yeah. You know? So,
right.
so we kind of, as a necessity to a parent, you know, to save them a lot of money, we created that concept. And then it just kind of got better and tighter, and got exactly what we wanted. And the final product, which I think is awesome, is the sleeve with the Velcro and the two things. You got the belt, but the shirt is really cool for the kids, because the shirt front, whole front of the shirt is all Velcro, so you can put it anywhere and it'll stick.
Nice.
So it could be like an infielder doing some work, or a catcher doing some work, and then you're okay, I'm gonna be a pitcher and outfielder, and I'm coming down here. But it allows them to go home, find a wall, use the plyo balls that we take with it, and just get reps like a hitter does in the garage or in the backyard in the cage. They're getting hundreds and hundreds of reps just easy, and just getting that muscle memory going, getting that timing. Now they can do that at home. They can right. do that at practice, you know, which has been really awesome. And the feedback's been more than I could ever imagine, because it's anything you kind of start, it's a little bit, you know, nerve wracking to know that, okay, you're sending this thing out to a person who's never met you. They're just going to look at the drills and videos, and hopefully they look at the explanation, they understand it. And it's been really, really, really great feedback from it. So I'm keep my fingers crossed. Now, if we
can get that's awesome.
More things, we're good.
Yeah, I've gotten to work with you a little bit, and you teach the plyos very specifically. So when you have to turn it loose to trust that somebody using your device, like, you know, yes, if it goes great, this is awesome. But that's really cool that it's gone as well as it has.
Yeah.
Personally, I just kind of want to touch a little bit about you. So, like, this has been your premise. You were a pitching coach. Obviously, you've been very successful. I've played with a lot of guys that you've trained through younger years. And, you know, I played with Adam Plutko, who I know was an early student of yours. Yeah. And what was it like kind of here? I think the arm path discussion really blew up in 2016 when Joe Kelly came out just throwing flames in his new short pocket. Yeah. And I know he's a guy you've worked with in the past. What was that like personally? Was that like a validating moment? Was it, were you excited to see other people discussing it? What was that like personally?
Yeah. That's an interesting, because we, our paths kind of converged at the same time. Both of us were figuring out that shortening your arm path, not necessarily being short, but just shortening your arm path was a way that helped the arm feel better and helped with performance. And so when he came in and we started throwing the football around and he's talking to me about shooting his arm, and I'm like, dude, that's what I'm teaching right now. It was almost like it was meant to be. And to see then how he just took his career of a completely different path, meaning he was injured all the time. He threw hard. Now, one of the big things he'll tell you too, is he was worried that he threw, you know, 98 miles an hour in college and minor league. So he threw hard. He was worried he's going to lose that, you know? And I think it was Wainwright who was talking to him in the very first time. I was like, hey, you're not going to last. This arm's great, but you're not going to last if you don't make some sort of change. So Wainwright is the one who kind of got hit in his ear first. And so once he did that, we noticed that velocity was increasing. He's starting to add different spin to pitches that were much more dynamic, and his changeup, which I thought literally that's what killed the Dodgers, was his changeup. Because when he threw his changeup, he lost tension and got looser with his arm, and that was his pitch to kind of fix his fastball at the time. So when he was almost not on that roster that World Series year, and he was asking me what to do and all that stuff, and I was like, hey, all right, are you taking ground balls at short? Because I know he likes to do that. He says, no, I haven't done that. Have you thrown the football on? No, I haven't done that. Have you thrown your changeup? No, I forgot. So these things that are really, you think would be like, hey, you got to remember these things. As you know, as a player, it's like sometimes you just get sidetracked with so much information, so many things going on, that you forget some of these basic fundamentals that help you just lock in without overthinking. Josh Domont was one thing last year, same similar thing. Josh's velocity had been dropping to 98, 97, which in most cases you'd be pretty excited that you're throwing that hard. Right. But when he was when I've seen him throw 101, 102, and then he came in and he just had such a different delivery. His glove shot high, he's stabbing down here. So what we did, similar to what Joe was, I just got him, you know, taking some ground balls, starting to stay loose, throw into the net, don't throw into a person so you're not distracted, and you just relax and you just flow, and then use the pocket path to kind of guide that flow and that rhythm. And then all of a sudden, his delivery just got so much better and so much better. And then, boom, his velo goes whoop back up to 102, 103, even hit 104. Same thing with Joe. So at that moment, it wasn't like now at that moment with Joe that I knew, oh, okay, this is going to be the biggest thing talked about in the next couple of years. It was probably more like everybody would look at Joe going, yeah, he can do it, but nobody else can do it. He's a freak athlete. But then all of a sudden you started seeing another guy changed his delivery. And then I think when Lucas Giolito made such a drastic change, that was kind of the moment I think people kind of took it a little more serious and started kind of paying attention. I mean, I've been screaming it for 2 years before that.
That's why I asked. Yeah.
Yeah. So I've been screaming that thing forever, because I see the eyes light up on a kid. I see the pro guy go, my God, my arm doesn't hurt anymore. I see these things that nobody would see unless you're actually in that kind of trenches and you're doing it, not just watching on a television screen to see someone change his delivery. There's so many more people who have changed their delivery that you'll never meet, you'll never see, but they'll thank you for the rest of their life because their arm feels better. And that's like most important to me. And then once those guys started, you know, Bauer started to look more compact, you started to see Bieber on the scene now, all these guys. And these guys were not just slouches. And I tell people all the time, I'm like, you know, a lot of haters of thinking that, you know, the short arm is not good for your arm. Well, I'll tell you, if I'm going to be too short, and I would say like guys like too short, meaning Giolito or Bauer or Joe Kelly, versus too long, then I'm going to go on those other short, because those guys are Cy Young Award winners, no hitters, multiple World Series rings. And the guys that are going to be going long, I don't know who they are.
Right.
I'll never meet them. Chances are I won't meet them. So if you're going to go to the extreme, and I say extreme because usually if you see my flow and stuff, it's not a tight short arm. It's,
right.
You know, you'll see guys that are successful that way. My point is that guys who are too short are still winning Cy Young, still winning no hitters and all these different things. Guys that are too long, those are hard ones to be pitching for much longer. So if you are a kid, definitely more geared towards infield or towards short versus kind of having a coach that's just trying to get you to reach back and get long and all this stuff, or just thinking like everybody can do it differently. It's just not, it's just so, it's proven too many times now. And luckily right. now, whether I'm the guy who is known for it, because there's plenty of coaches that have taught that, I'm sure we all try to hit ground balls to that crazy arm path guy and see if he can clean it up. But the problem was always is that they just did that only. They didn't develop a program or a system that they could continually do daily to really make the significant change. I noticed that most guys would be like, you know, oh, shorten his arm. How do you do it? Oh, I just want to think like an infielder. Oh, I used to do that back in the day. I'd hit ground balls to our pitchers, but then they'd go in the game and they wouldn't change at all. Like you didn't give them enough information. You didn't get enough drills. You didn't stick with it long enough. It takes time. You know, some guys take a little bit of time.
Definitely. That's interesting. I think a guy I think about is Plesac, is Zach Plesac. The first time you see him, you're like, whoa, that's wild. Right. And then he's so repeatable. He's throwing the sliders really, really good. Like you just see it's so consistent and so repeatable. And Lucas, I didn't even think about Lucas, but he's another one, a great example. So personally for you, Dave, I'll let you go and grab that lunch. Sorry to hold you up so long, but I appreciate you taking the time. But
just, I get fired up talking about this stuff.
I love it. It's fascinating to me. So it's why the main reason we're doing this is to try to, this information is just really cool and we just want to help disseminate it. So, but you personally, I'm sure you've had offers to coach a team or coach professionally or something like that. Is that something that interests you, or you personally, do you love your lab and getting to work with a variety of guys? What kind of makes you tick, and what would you like to do in the future maybe?
Yeah, I've never been wanting to go coach like full time on a pro staff team, but more just because I didn't want to get on a bus ride again my rest of my life. But I've done a lot of consulting work, which is fun, and I think that's powerful. I think I can do a lot better job teaching coaching staffs at the younger level. I would say my sweet spot would be coaching a kid who's just coming into the system, doesn't worry about wins and losses. You drafted him because he's so raw, but he's got potential in there, and you can clean him up and give him this kind of toolbox. Or the kid that, or the injured athlete, so the one that just continues to get hurt and he needs to change something, that's the guy too. So I think at those two places I fit really, really well in a pro organization, which is kind of where I've been doing some stuff with some teams. Pocket Path is going to be really kind of taking a lot of my time out to nationally, because we'll be kind of announcing a pretty big partnership here pretty soon. That's going to probably get me traveling a little bit more than I have in the past. And that way, clinics and camps and spreading the word and doing all these things is going to be my big kind of goal for coming out of 2021, and trying to get out of the compound as much as I can to share share the knowledge a little bit.
Nice. Well, awesome. Thank you so much for joining me, Dave. This was super informative. I appreciate you.
You've been
very kind to me over my career, and this has been really cool to hear you share, and I'm happy to hear you spreading the gospel and getting the Pocket Path around. So very cool, and thank you very much.
Good talking to you, Zach.
You too.
You got
take care.